Episode 13 of Top Turtle MMA is brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. Sisu Mouthguards, the thinnest, most breathable, yet strongest, and most durable mouthguard on the marketplace. You're going to want to go ahead and check out sisuguard.com. That's their website. Learn all about their Diffusix trademark technology. It's kind of like the perforations in the mouthguard act similar to the trusses on a bridge, allowing the structure to flex when an impact occurs. I didn't make that up. Johannes Schwenk did. He's a PhD.
And you gotta trust Schwanky.
Absolutely. So head on over to sisuguard.com. Learn all about their different mouthguards for different parts of your life. If you play team sports, you're going to want to go ahead and get yourself the Aero Guard. If you're into the high impact sports, go ahead and get yourself the Max Guard. And if you're just a little fella or a small gal, go ahead and get yourself the Junior Guard. It's for youth sports. Play the music. All right, we are rolling. I am David Tremonti, your co-host. This is Top Turtle MMA. I am joined by Daniel Gumby Vreeland. You over there, Dan?
I'm over here, and I just want to let the listeners know before we get kicking off here that you can follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or all kinds of other podcast services. You can email us at topturtlemma@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at topturtlemma, or follow Gumby on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland.
And that's pretty much all the ways you can reach us. You can also head over to MMA-manifesto.com. You can get all the latest news. You can get topical articles. And, of course, you can get this podcast under the podcast tab.
You know what I really like about MMA? Dashmanifesto.com, Gumby, those fight camp rankings that they're keeping.
Yeah, I thought that was a really innovative idea. Obviously, I wish I could take credit for it, but that was all the mastermind Jeff Fox there on that one. But really interesting stuff, too, because it not only tracks the champs and it gives the champs a little bit of extra credit, but it also tracks the you know, the guys on the prelims that you might not realize that a camp is doing phenomenal. Somebody like Syndicate MMA, who was one of the people we interviewed, their coach, John Wood, the other day. You know, like I said, that he should be getting more credit for how good he's doing.
Yeah, so if I go to the most updated rankings that were just posted at the end of March, do you have a guess for who the top team so far this year is going to be?
I do, but only because I've read that article before. So it's American Top Team?
That is correct.
Yeah, and then there's Alpha Male up there, but then I don't remember after that.
Yeah, I mean, with Alpha Male, like Top Team, they've had 11 fighters compete. Alpha Male's only had four, but they're 4-0. Extreme Couture only had two fighters compete, but they're 2-0.
Wait. Alpha Male's 4-0?
That's what is listed here on the website.
We might need to make a correction on that because TJ Dillashaw no longer Alpha Male. That's my mess up.
Nah.
That's right. Ooh, what a taboo.
I know, but yeah, so it's a cool look there. So you check that out, MMA-manifesto.com, the Fight Camp team standings. So anyway, let's get to the news of the week, Gumby, and I'd have to say the biggest piece of news to come out since we last spoke is that your boy, OSP, will be filling in for Daniel Cormier. Of course, when the news broke that the fight was off, Cormier versus Jones at UFC 197, everyone immediately assumed it would be because of John Jones's legal troubles. Not the case. It's actually because of that tiny rumor. We brought it up last week, but it wasn't really getting a lot of play because most people were more concerned about Jones's legal troubles, and that is that Cormier was walking around a wrestling tournament a couple of weeks ago with a limp, and it proves true. He is injured. He cannot fight, and OSP steps in on short notice. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'd like to give you credit on that because you brought up him limping around and I passed it off as a stupid rumor and it turned out to be so true.
Sometimes you check those dark corners of the internet and these MMA forums will come through with a gem every once in a while.
Yeah, and you definitely pulled a gem there. My other thought is just that it seems like a super one-sided fight. Obviously, they weren't able to get Rumble to step in. They wanted it to be an interim title fight. OSP is probably the next best pick after that.
Well, is he though? Or could have you just moved up one of Rashad, the former champ, or Glover, the former title contender?
But aren't they both coming off of losses? At least OSP is coming off a win.
Glover's coming off a win because Glover just beat OSP, actually, last year.
Is that his most recent fight?
Well, and then he beat Patrick Cummins, if I'm not mistaken. I'll look it up right now, but he's on a two-fight win streak.
Yeah, so then that one would make more sense to me. But then again, maybe he didn't want that fight. You know, maybe OSP is the only one who would take a fight with John Jones on a couple weeks' notice. Which would make sense to me. Like, I wouldn't want to fight John Jones on, I mean, any week's notice. But if I was a fighter at 205, I wouldn't want to fight him on short notice.
Yeah, I mean, well, for OSP, you know, I think his stock kind of took a hit when he main evented a card, I think last summer, if I'm not mistaken. I'll look it up now. It was against Glover. I think he had the big UFC marketing push behind him. And in that main event, he lost his second main event loss because he also lost to Bader in a main event. And, Glover is on a 2-fight win streak, and he beat OSP last August. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that for St. Preux, it probably would have been a couple more legitimate wins in a row to get back into title contention. So for him, he probably looked at it and was like, hey, here's my best bet to a clear title shot, short notice.
Yeah, and, it's MMA. Weirder things have happened, right? Have weirder things happened. Then again, that's a good question to think about in itself. If OSP beat John Bones Jones, is it the biggest upset in MMA history?
You
think so?
It's yes. I mean,
bigger than, well, what's your number one right now?
Oh, God. I don't actually think of Holly over Ronda as the biggest upset of all time.
I don't either. I'm hoping you're thinking the same one as me.
I don't think TJ Dillashaw over Barão.
No, I say Sarah GSP.
Yes, that is actually what I would say. Right.
Yep, that's my number one. And I would say it's bigger than that, too, because Sarah at least had, like, you know, a little bit of momentum behind him.
Right.
You know, won the show, that whole thing. One-punch knockout power. And he's got a good jiu-jitsu game, too. Here, John Jones, we've talked about it before, might be the greatest fighter of all time.
And that's why it would have to be the biggest upset
of
all time.
Yeah, and it's a guy who seemingly has no business being in the cage with him right now.
You know, so now the one angle I want to take on the whole interim title aspect of it all, and I thought this when they stripped him of the legitimate title last spring, I was kind of like, okay, I get it. You don't want to take the PR hit. He hit the girl. She was pregnant in the car. You don't want to go tell your corporate sponsors that your light heavyweight champion is a scumbag. So they stripped him of the title. But now, in retrospect, if they had just made the Cormier-Rumble fight, the fill-in last May for when Jones stepped out an interim title, this could just be John Jones defending his legitimate title.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only issue with that one for me, though, is they had no idea how long Jones was going to be out. Jones could have been out 2-3 years getting his shit together. Luckily,
but isn't that the point of an interim, and I'm putting the quotation marks up, you know, air quotation marks, an interim title? Call it an interim title that Cormier holds until the Jones thing shakes out.
Yeah, well, but what happens if, like, they do that? And the Jones is just like a drawn-out court case. You know, I mean, thank God it wasn't, so we don't actually have to know about what we would do here. But if it was, like, do you just have an interim champion for 18 months? It would sound stupid for him to defend an interim belt 3 times.
What's the most an interim title has ever been defended? Was it Mir?
I think Mir? Once, maybe Mir.
Yeah.
And then it was unified?
Right. And Cormier, Cormier would have only defended it once. This is 2020.
Yeah, of course, retrospective. But, like, they didn't know that, so they stripped it to stop this, like, disaster situation, which wouldn't have even happened from happening.
Yeah, titles are all bullshit anyway. Jose Aldo just said that. And Nate Diaz kind of shattered that fantasy, too.
Yeah.
It's all a big fairy tale. All right, that was the John Jones stuff. The only other thing, I guess, to come out of that was Cormier did go on the MMA Hour today. We're taping Monday, and he offered OSP to come out to AKA free fight camp. He'd pay for the flight. He'd get to train with Cain Velasquez, Luke Rockhold, the whole bit. I don't know if he's responded to such a nice offer, but
it's interesting at least. And, you know, it could benefit him from being in a camp like that anyway. Do you know where OSP trains off the top of your head?
Well, he's a Tennessee guy, right?
Yeah, I know he went to the University of Tennessee, played football for him.
And I want to say
he was a linebacker.
I'll tell you right now. Association Knoxville MMA.
Yeah, so like...
That's on SureDog.
Yeah, I have no idea what that is. I don't know who trains those people. I don't know any of his training partners.
Yeah, the only other pro fighter listed under Knoxville MMA is Justin Fisher.
And I don't know that name.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's what I'd say to OSP about going and train to AKA. OSP, don't do it. Anyone who trains there gets injured. We'll have to find a replacement for the replacement.
Like carrying his bag through the front door and his shoulder snaps off.
Exactly. Don't do it. I beg you, OSP. Just stick to Tennessee. You'll be safer.
That camp, I mean, knock on wood, too, because, like, what are we, 1 week away from, week and a half away from Nurmagomedov actually making a fight?
Yeah.
Like,
which is a small miracle in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe he's gotten this close, to be honest with you.
And then the last thing on Jones is, I guess it's official now, he did get a personal driver, which is like, really? It took this long?
I didn't see that, but that's, I love that that's news on the MMA rounds, that they're not going to let him drive a car anymore.
So, second bit of news is, Romero, your boy, Yoel Romero, got his USADA suspension reduced. He took a supplement that was, not on the banned list, but it had, it was a tainted supplement. I guess, you know, the FDA doesn't really check supplements, so this kind of stuff happens. So it won't be the full suspension. It'll be like a reduced 6 month suspension. So you kind of figure, you know, back in title contention end of the year, right?
Yeah, you would imagine it's, I don't know. This is all weird to me because, you know, the way that I've always thought of it is that you have to know what's going into your body. And obviously you can read the labels and stuff. And people can lie to you, which is what Romero's claiming here. But at the same time, like, you can't go pumping your body filled with all these different supplements without it being a trusted name. You know, like, I have no idea where he got it from. I know he's talking about suing them. There's, like, no laws that he can sue them against. Like, they can put whatever they want on the label. Like, right. You said, nothing's regulated. Right. So, I mean, like, I still want to put some of the blame on him for that one. Because, you know, to me, I don't know. You got to know what's going into your body. And I know some of these guys want like extra supplements for an extra push and stuff. But at the same time, this sport being tested as much as it possibly is at this point, you've got to make sure you're clean at all the times because it could cost him a title shot still. You know, like who knows?
Yeah, I
mean,
I mean,
if Weidman beats Rockhold by some miracle,
we'll get a trilogy.
You're going to get a trilogy. And then instantly, Romero's got to fight again.
Yeah, and I actually, given the performance was a little lackluster, the win against Jacare, that was supposed to be the number one contender fight, I don't think he's an instant title contender, especially coming off a six-month suspension. They'll give him someone to kind of sing for his supper and earn his way back into title contention.
It would be interesting if Jacare beats, he's fighting Belfort, correct?
Correct.
That right? If Jacare beats Belfort, it would be interesting to see if they're willing to match them up again.
Yes.
Because, you know, the first one, you know, controversial decision, you know, I had Jacare winning the fight. A lot of people had Jacare winning the fight in, you know, like, it would give him a chance to redeem himself. Jacare would technically have a win again to, like, fight back up to Romero status. And I'd watch it again, even though it was a little bit more of a boring fight.
Oh, I'd definitely watch that again. All right, and then the other news item, because it was kind of a light week in news, but the other news item was, did you happen to catch Polaris 3, the grappling tournament, Tonin versus Husamir Palhares?
Yeah, I did see it. What a hell of a match. And the crazy piece of that for me, too, Palhares on the defensive almost the entire
time.
Match.
Yeah.
He was in a couple of heel hooks that looked deep.
Yes.
And I didn't ever at any point think to myself, Husamir's got him.
Yeah,
you know, in three or four times, I thought Gary Tonin's got him.
The two things that I loved about that tournament, just from a ha-ha standpoint, was one, the announcers, and I don't know who it was, but saying that Polaris looked farm boy strong. dude, no, you don't get that big on farms unless you're eating horses or taking horse steroids.
And take it from some people who've lived around farms in their lives.
Yeah, exactly. and then the other one was, and this is going to bridge to what I really wanted to talk to you about, but I noticed that the referees or the sideline guys, people working the tournament, had shirts that said death before decision or something equally aggressive, and then every fight on the main card went to decision. Went to a draw.
Every single fight was a draw.
And so on, you know, it's funny, there's a writer on MMA Fighting. He has a serious show, Luke Thomas, and I really like him. Very much respect his work. But he had posted on Twitter something about how sub-only tournaments take away from, like, what martial arts is about and how if you want to see finishes, you need to have point tournaments because points rewards good positions and you only get submissions from good positions. Never disagreed with something more in my entire fucking life.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, too, because, you know, a lot of the times these submissions come from people who know that they can't play it safe. You know, in my opinion, I've never seen more submissions than when we went to that submission-only tournament that we competed in. it was way more submissions than decisions.
Right. And then the same thing with like with EBI, you know, and Polaris too, you know, EBI has the good overtime rules where they'll just force people into like, you know,
crappy positions
basically. And then you get subs off of that, but you're dealing with high level guys. It's just like the UFC. It's like, are you going to complain when things go to decision? When something goes to a decision, it's because you have two high level guys. You get a razor thin decision, and you know, that's just as exciting sometimes as a finish. But short of making these submission grappling matches last, like, you know, 2 hours, like the old wrestling competitions in the early Grecian Olympics, you know, this, it's just what's going to happen. So you either enjoy it for kind of the beauty of it, and you appreciate the fact that these guys are going for submissions, which is better than points.
And and you said it best, too. You got to enjoy it for the beauty of it. Because if you watch that Tonin Polaris fight instead of just, you know, clicking on the results, the draw result really doesn't do justice for how dominant Tonin was, how close he was on a couple of submissions. He had a knee bar that I thought Polaris's knee was going to pop.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you know, obviously a draw will never tell you that and will never tell you how good the fight is, because there were some boring ones on the card that I didn't particularly care for.
And that's going to happen.
And that'll happen. But that one was really exciting.
And that's why, I mean, we'll talk about it as we draw near, but the EBI format is the best, and the tournament makes it that much more exciting, because you kind of can follow someone from round one all the way to, you know, that fourth fight.
Yeah, and it more incentive to try to finish quick, too.
All right, so Gumby, let's get to your WrestleMania breakdown. Go.
I don't know anything about professional wrestling. You're the professional wrestling guy. I know that thanks to my SportsCenter, avid SportsCenter watching, I know Shaquille O'Neal showed up and got a dual choke slam in last night.
You know what else is funny? And this is kind of the last thing I'll say before we cut to our interview, and then we'll start breaking down this heavyweight card this weekend. I don't know if this is sort of like an indication of Q rating, but last WrestleMania season, Ronda Rousey was, if you remember, she had like a guest appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was big, and it was big for them. It was big for her, kind of like a cross promotion thing. And there was a lot of talk last year that was WrestleMania 31. Last night was WrestleMania 32, that she'd be back for 32 and maybe work more of like an actual professional wrestling match. And she was nowhere to be found, and she's not filming a movie right now. So I wonder, did they not call her up? Is her stock kind of dropping a little bit? I mean, she hosted SNL in January.
It could be a little bit of her stock dropping off, but I would say more so than that. It's just like she lost. She's super focused on coming back.
I hope so.
And I really do truly believe that. Some people believe that she's out there filming movies, you know, doing what she's doing. I think she's training as hard as she's ever trained.
And it was funny, yesterday there were some like internet trolls who were insinuating that Connor was going to show up at WrestleMania. And then, well, he's a wrestling fan.
I know he's a wrestling fan, but he's another one who's so super focused that I don't think he'd ever do something that could jeopardize his career.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. And yeah, like he passed on a movie role because that's
he's too focused on making sure he fights.
But he kind of got into it on Twitter and sort of, you know, baited the fans.
Milked it a little bit.
Yeah, it was just funny. All right, we will now cut to our interview with Dom Waters.
Yeah, two-fight UFC veteran, tough participant back in the Carwin versus Nelson episode, and a really fun interview that gives us kind of the inside workings of what's going on at Jackson right now, too, which is kind of fun.
This interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in the lovely, quaint, charming town of Amherst, Massachusetts, in western Massachusetts. If you're in southern Vermont, eastern New York State, Northern Connecticut, or Eastern Mass, it's worth the travel. Classes 6 days a week, stand-up striking 2 days a week, no-gi jiu-jitsu 3 days a week, and gi jiu-jitsu 1 day a week. You can check out the website at AmherstMMA.com. New England Submission Fighting brings you our interview with UFC fighter Dom Waters.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with my co-host Dave Tremonti, and we're here with UFC veteran Dom Waters, who fights May 8th at UFC Fight Night 87, which is in Rotterdam, against Leon Edwards. So you've started your UFC career 0-2. Is there any added pressure right now to definitely pull off a win or to fight safer?
No, man. That's just not my style, fighting safe. You know, real good testing there. Won a real good fight. That's why I got into this thing. And it's no laying pray for me or anything. It's I'm just looking forward to a great fight. You know, Leon's a real good guy, real athletic and everything. So I'm pretty excited for this one.
Yeah, and it certainly is going to be a good fight. You talked a little bit about your style there. I know primarily you work out of Jackson's, but I've seen you've been working some other places. What are some of the other places you've traveled to get ready for this fight?
I was just in Denver for like a week or so at a Grudge Training Center with sparring Nate Marquardt and working with Trevor Whitman, and that was pretty good, man. But, you know, home base is at Jackson Link MMA Academy, and man, Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn, those two are definitely wizards in their respective areas.
When you work with Greg Jackson, how much of the fight planning does he leave up to you, and how much does he kind of take control over?
He takes control most of the time, but it's like watching film. He can see things that you can't see. He kind of says it out, and you're like, yeah, see, he threw that, but why? And then, you know, he has all these answers for you and everything, so it's like you're playing a video game and he's you.
And that's certainly a great asset to have on hand when you're getting a late replacement, because you were originally supposed to fight Peter Sobota at the same exact fight card. How has that opponent change kind of changed up your plans for how you're planning on fighting this one?
Changed it up a little bit, you know, but same time, Peter's a guy who isn't real explosive or athletic. He's just a real technical guy, and I see Leon as a real technical striker. What he's like explosive and athletic like myself, so it'll be a different fight than I imagine with Peter, but it's all the same, man. You know, you go in there ready for anything.
So we'll get a little bit away from your fight prep, obviously, because we don't want to give too much away. So you were a contestant on The Ultimate Fighter, which always seems to be a good time, and in that season in particular seemed to have a lot of craziness on it. Whenever we talk to a Ultimate Fighter contestant, they usually have like one or two more extra crazy things that went on behind the stage. Is there anything crazier that went on in the Tough Live season that the fans don't know about?
I wasn't on the Tough Live. I was on the season afterwards.
Oh, that's right. The Nelson season. Nelson versus Carl.
Yeah. Let's see. Me and the guy, the Mohawk guy, Julian, we got into a little altercation or whatever, you know, the Let Me Bang Bro incident. And I think about a week later, the eventual winner, Cody Smith, he actually got into it with Julian, and he started calling him Judy Browning, you know. And the guy was super pissed, man, and I ended up breaking up a fight. And I'm like, I don't really talk to either of these guys, but you know, I just didn't want to see anybody get kicked off the show. Like, me and Code, man, pretty cool now. But on the show, you know, you're against everybody. So it's just like, yeah, that was pretty funny. They got into a pretty rough. But I don't think that made the show. I mean, I didn't really watch all the episodes, but I think I would have heard about that.
You didn't watch all the episodes? That's actually kind of surprising. You don't want to see yourself being filmed all that time in the house, or what happened there?
No, yeah, I mean, I didn't. I liked Ultimate Fighter. I watched all the seasons except mine, pretty much. Like, I just don't want to. I guess it's just weird seeing yourself on TV, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you kept in touch with any of your former castmates from that season?
I kept in touch with a lot of them, man. And actually, so me and James Chaney, we were from the same area, so. James is the one I kept in touch with the most, but I know what pretty much all the guys are doing right now, except the guy Nick that was from Alaska. But
Heron
other than
Webb.
That guy. Other than that, I mean, all the other guys, I don't talk to them frequently. I talk to like probably four or five of them frequently, but I know what they're doing. You know, like it's pretty cool. Keep up with all the guys.
Yeah, certainly when you go through something like that, there's definitely a bigger bond there as well. So how about contact with the coaches? I know you were on Team Roy Nelson. So have you kept in touch with Roy and his coaches? Has there ever been any offer to work with him?
Not at all. I haven't kept in touch with Roy. I haven't seen him since the season, actually. I'm more kept in touch with like, the other team, you know? Like, that's how me going up to Denver came about. Mark Holt was kind of down here. he's fighting on May 14th in Brazil, and we were sparring, and he's like, man, you've gotten way better since the show.
Nice.
He kind of extended the offer, so next thing I know, I was in Denver 2 weeks later, and I'm sparring him, and, you know, Trevor Whitman was up there, so I got to work with Trevor some more. And I think Shane just stopped by. He wasn't working out. The guy, he's massive, you know. Like, he still looks like he's in shape, but I never realized, you know, I never realized what a massive human being Shane Carwin is. But he kind of stopped in, you know. Pat Bear was up there, so that was kind of a little reunion with the other side of the coaches.
It's funny when DC pulled out of that fight last week and Jones put out the challenge to anyone, we were talking about this earlier. Shane Carwin threw his name in the ring. I think he was just trolling him, but we were thinking how much fun that would be to see Jones versus Carwin someday.
Man, I know, right? I shook that guy's hand and mine disappeared, and I had a pretty big hand.
That's
I'm
awesome.
Like, if my hand can disappear in this man, they were so I was up there. We were just reminiscing on old stories, and Trevor Whitman was telling a story about when Shane was fairly new, and he put him on the heavy bag, and he's like, throw a 1-2 and a right kick, you know, like just a little leg kick or whatever on the bag. And Shane throws his kick, and he totally ripped all the bolts out of the ceiling.
Oh, my God. Flying.
And he said, so he's all like, you can never throw another leg kick again. You're like, that's the most powerful leg kick I've ever seen.
That is awesome. So, Dom, we're going to let you go here in a minute, but one last question. Sticking on your teammate, John Jones, I mean, he's much in the news the past week. So, OSP stepped up on short notice, and then not sure if you saw it today, but Daniel Cormier offered to fly OSP out to AKA and have a free training camp for 2 to 3 weeks. Obviously just a bit of like mental warfare against Jones, but what do you think of that move? Is that something you think OSP should actually take him up on?
I mean, you know, AKA is a pretty cool gym, you know, like I'm from up there in NorCal or whatever. And I don't know. I think if I'm correct, like OSP is a guy who always travels around, right?
I believe so, we were talking about that earlier too. We didn't know what fight camp he was out of, so I think he's just a nomad that goes from place to place.
Yeah, like I mean, John doesn't like Cormier at all. You know, they have their but if I'm just like, if like not me, but if I'm like OSP, you might wanna take him up on that, but that guy probably has all his own training camp, and plus, like, just in the, you know, maybe he might be fighting Cormier later on, so why would you want to go train him?
That's a good point.
It's kind of like he's just doing it to try to get up under Jones' skin anyway.
And you also have to take into account that everyone who goes to AKA seemingly gets injured at one point or another. So I'd hate to see the replacement have to find a replacement.
Yeah, like, don't we want to see Khabib fight again? It's like,
yes.
Like almost all their fighters get hurt, bro. Like, what the heck? And I was talking to somebody about it last week, just NorCal in general. And, you know, you spar hard up there. It's just, I don't know if it's something in the water or something, but I can't remember. It was days. You just go at it, man. You like fight down on your mouthpiece and you just go at it. But that's kind of like a dying breed, like, and not in a bad way. Like, I don't like to spar hard all the time. You know, you gotta make sure you can have longevity in the sport if you want it.
That's right. Well, Dom, we super appreciate the time. We wish you all the luck in the world in your next fight, and we can't wait to see you compete again.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
All right, Gumby, there you have it. Dom Waters, kind of a funny guy.
Yeah, really funny guy. I appreciated the story from Tough, too, because those are always, like I said on the interview, those are always some of the best stories, the ones that don't get on TV. And it looks like the Julian the Pain Train Lane was a little bit more troublesome even than we got to see.
There's always one on every season.
It seems to be.
All right, we will now transition to our preview of UFC Fight Night 86, Rothwell versus Dos Santos. It takes place this Sunday, April 10th in Zagreb, which is in Croatia, and it will be a main event of Ben Rothwell versus Chigano Junior Dos Santos. Ben Rothwell Gumby is just on the win streak of his life. He's on a four-fight win streak, knocked out Alistair Overeem, knocked out Brandon Vera, and subbed with a go-go choke Matt Mitrione and, of all fucking people, Josh Barnett.
I'm still not over that submission.
It seems like a dream. And Junior Dos Santos, of course, is coming off the vicious loss, knockout by Alistair Overeem, but he beat Stipe in a five-round war 1 year prior. That was in December of 2014. And if you go back another year prior, the loss to Cain Velasquez, also a TKO in the fifth round. So dude's got some mileage on him. He's 1-2 in his last three. Your thoughts on this fight?
So maybe it's, I don't know what it is about Ben Rothwell, but something tells me that he can't do it all the time. And that's really, I mean, I've picked against him, I think, in all of his last four victories. I can't honestly think of one of those four victories that I picked him to win in. And I'm going to pick against him again. Maybe he likes me picking against him. Yeah, I'm going to.
You don't think JDS is Dunskies?
I don't think so. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. He looks slow against Overeem. Overeem looks slow against him, too. And people are touting him as the next title challenger. You know, like, Dos Santos is a guy who knocked out Cain Velasquez and has looked damn good against people like Stipe Miocic. Like, I thought Miocic won that fight, but, like,
I did too.
He went to hell with Dos Santos in a boxing match, and there's a lot you could say about that. I don't think Rothwell's hands are better than Stipe's.
No, they are not.
No, I don't think so. He might have more power, maybe, but he certainly doesn't have better speed. And again, so I'm going to say that I doubt that he takes Dos Santos down, and I don't see Dos Santos shooting to take him down and him getting stuck in a go-go choke, right? Because that's why the two go-go chokes have happened. Mitrione and Barnett shot.
Yeah, that's
so you
point.
Have to assume that either Dos Santos is going to shoot and get submitted, or Rothwell's going to knock him out standing, and I don't think his boxing is good enough to knock out Dos Santos standing.
Yeah.
I mean, has anybody ever knocked out Dos Santos standing? Not to my recollection.
Well, what I was going to say was Dos Santos, he's only been submitted once. It was an armbar back in a Brazilian fight promotion, and that was back in 2007. You asked, has anyone ever knocked him out standing?
Standing, because I know Velasquez TKO'd him on the ground.
Right. That would be no one is the answer to that.
And he's definitely faced way better boxers than Rothwell. So I just don't think it's going to be Rothwell that does that. I think if Rothwell's going to win this fight.
I'm sorry, Overeem did knock him out.
Yeah, that's true. He did knock him out. But was he out? I guess my distinction there was he wasn't like out right away. He was kind of like groggy. You're right. He definitely got him from standing. But that's Overeem, K1 kickboxing champion.
Yeah.
Like
your point stands.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to be concise.
You're right, though.
I just wanted to be complete in our history.
That's right. So in order for Rothwell to win this, in my head, he's got to outwork JDS for 3 out of 5 rounds. And you know, I mean, just going on stature alone, do you think he's in better shape than JDS?
I do not.
Of course not. As a matter of fact, I think that's part of the reason why I pick against him all the time is he's so unassuming looking, right? Like, who looks at Ben Rothwell and is like, man, that's a scary dude, unless he's doing that weird laugh or the funky dance.
Don't judge a book by its covers, though, no?
I mean, definitely. I mean, he's proven us wrong enough times. I mean, he's proven me wrong, like I said, 4 times in a row. There's a chance he proves me wrong the 5th time, but I think this is Dos Santos's fight.
And just for betting odds purposes, it's actually, I mean, Vegas has it rather razor thin. You're looking at Rothwell as the I mean, he's a minus 105 on Bovada, but then as much as a plus 108 on Sportsbet.
So that's super, super close.
And JDS, minus 125 basically across the board, as low as minus 115.
Yeah, and I would probably, if I was betting on that fight, I would definitely get some money on JDS because I think that close to even you're not going to get for a JDS fight that I think is a pretty clear path to victory for him.
All right, and then we'll move to the co-main event, which sounds weird to say as a co-main event, but it will be.
It's all about heavyweights in this one.
It is. A lot of poundage here. Derek the Black Beast Lewis versus Gabriel Gonzaga. Is Black Beast his nickname?
Black Beast, and I think he goes by Bama Beast, too. He goes by a couple of different ones.
Okay, well, he is a beast.
Yeah, talk about, again, one of those statures that is very assuming rather than unassuming. He scares the piss out of people when he steps into the cage with him.
Is he the one that has Knockout King tattooed on his chest? Or am I thinking of someone else?
I can't remember. It's possible. I'm not up on the tattoos unless you count Alan Belcher's tattoo of Johnny Cash.
Or Brock Lesnar's dick tattoo.
Yeah.
All right. So with that being said, Derek Lewis, he's on a 2-fight win streak. Gumby, he's 2-1 in his last three. His last loss came to Sean Jordan back in June of 2015. So he's been very active here the past 9 months or so. Gonzaga, the veteran from our neck of the woods here in Western Massachusetts, is actually coming off a win. Hey, good for him.
Konstantin Aronkin. That's one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life.
Yes. And before that, a 3-fight losing streak.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on this fight, and I'm guessing you're leaning towards Lewis.
I'm leaning way towards Lewis. I mean, Gonzaga's one of those guys who's he made his living to start with some awesome, awesome jiu-jitsu. You know, like, can't say enough about his jiu-jitsu as far as the heavyweight division goes. He knocked out Krokop with his leg, and since then, he's a little bit leaning on his stand-up a little bit too much, which I don't think is there. You know, Carwin knocked him out hard, who we've mentioned a couple of times on this show. You know, he's gotten beat up on his feet, and with Lewis just being as big as he is, I mean, I think this is a disaster area if he stays standing for more than, like, 15 seconds.
Well, Vegas also seems to be agreeing with you. He, Derek Lewis, is the -185 favorite. Gonzaga, actually, just a +160 dog, which seems rather generous.
Yeah, that's not enticing to me at all at that. You know, not even 2-1 for a guy who I think is going to get just pounded.
We'll move on. You have Francis Ngannou versus, Curtis Blaydes, or did
it's Curtis Blaydes, yeah.
Okay.
Curtis the Razor Blaydes.
That's a great nickname. Yeah. He's 5-0, but making his UFC debut. He is from, Oklahoma.
Nowhere Oklahoma, right?
Nowhere Oklahoma. That's right. Yeah. That's classic. Ngannou is 6-1 in his MMA career. He is 1-0 in the UFC, having beating Luis Henry Barbosa de Oliveira with a KO, and that was back in December of 2015. Your thoughts?
That KO was super impressive too. It was the first fight on that card. He landed an uppercut early in
the Dos Anjos versus Cerrone Fox card.
I think so. Yeah, is that the one? And he threw an uppercut, and the guy went cold hard. And it instantly made me a big fan of Ngannou because he was kind of getting beat. He was kind of getting taken down a little bit too much. And instantly when I saw this fight that he was getting a newbie, I was like, oh, good for Ngannou. It looks like he's going to pick up another one. And then I watched some film on Blaydes. Blaydes is 5-0 with 5 first-round ground-and-pound TKOs.
Damn.
Every single one's a ground-and-pound TKO. He's a... He was in the, I believe he was a finalist in juniors in college, in junior college, for wrestling. So he's just got mean takedowns and ground and pound from takedowns. And knowing Ngannou got taken down by Henrique, I think Blaydes is going to take him down and make him 6-0 here with ground and pound.
All right. I like that. So making his debut, you're predicting the win.
Yeah. And that too is he's got he's fought for good promotions too. So it's not like he's just coming from, some tiny promotion.
Moving on to more heavyweight offerings. We have friend of the show, Timothy Best Mustache in MMA right now, Johnson versus Marcin Tybura. Now, Tim Johnson, we interviewed him. We like him. He's a personality. He looks like the Nazi airplane mechanic that Indiana Jones had a fight with in Raiders of the Lost Ark. But he's coming off a loss to recently cut, which is absolutely crazy because he was 6-2 in the UFC in one of the weakest divisions, Jared Rochalt. But before that, he did win his debut, Timothy Johnson, that is, with a TKO of Shamil Abdurakhimov. Right.
And you were going to have trouble with that one.
Yeah, I was. Thank you. So he's 1-1 in the UFC. And Marcin Tybura is making his UFC debut. He is 13-1 as a pro, and he is fighting out of Poland. Your thoughts?
So Tybura is a M1 guy, and he's super highly touted. His that one loss is an injury stoppage, so he actually hasn't really been beaten unless you count. He's fought Stephen Putz, who's a pretty legitimate prospect too.
What a putz.
Yeah. And so he's pretty highly touted over there, but looking at the skills he's got, he throws a lot of high kicks. And if you know Timothy Johnson's game is to get on top of you, mount you, and drop the ground and pound. And I think somebody who throws as many kicks as Tybura does is gonna get him caught, and we're gonna see more ground and pound. I'm going 4-4 on the heavyweight finishes. I'm going to say the first three there by ground and pound, TKO. The only exception is Dos Santos. I'm going to say gets Rothwell on his feet. And we see 4 KOs in the last 4 fights.
So just to be clear here, you are not predicting heavyweight boar fest. You're predicting 4 first-round finishes?
I will say Tim Johnson has to get Tybura into the second round. Because Tim Johnson, despite his stature, because he is a big dude, again, one of those guys who doesn't look like a killer, he's one of those guys who needs to drag him a little bit deeper because his cardio is actually way better than it looks, and it's really good for a 265 guy, which is why he, like, you know, usually gets them out in the second round and finishes people.
All right, now we will get to move to the 205-pound weight class, and we will see the veteran coming back to the UFC after a brief absence, Igor Pokrajov.
Pokrajek,
the Duke, as he is known, will be fighting Jan Blankowicz. Now, Igor is on a 3-fight win streak in FFC and MFC, and coming back to the UFC after being cut. Jan Blankowicz is coming off a loss to Beeston 25-8, I think it is now, Corey Anderson, and a loss to Jimmy Manuel before that. No slouches by any stretch of the imaginations. He also has a win over Ilir Latifi, one of our faves, the Sledgehammer. So he is 1-2 in his UFC career. Is Jan Blankowicz? How do you see this one going down?
I like Blankowicz, mostly just because he does have that power. Like you said, a win over Latifi, I don't take lightly. We did the underrated episode last time, and I said Latifi is super underrated. You know, I truly believe that. And he body kicked Latifi to a TKO, which is just, you know, really, really impressive stuff. And I think here, Pokrajek has been stunned a few times in the past. I believe his last 2 fights in the UFC, he got knocked out. Blankowicz is the type of person who can knock you out, or at least put you in trouble enough so that he wins a decision. And I'm going to say he takes this one with his hands.
All right. I take your word for it. And last fight on the FS1 main card. And again, this is Sunday afternoon starting at 2 p.m. people. So remember that. You have a strawweight offering, Gumby, and you have the lovely Marna Muraz. She is the Iron Lady. She is from the Ukraine, and she is 6-1 in her MMA career. She's ranked number 9 in the UFC strawweight division. She will be fighting, and of course my computer crashes at this very moment, but she will be fighting Christina Stanclu, nicknamed Barbie. She is from Romania. She does not have a photo on UFC.com, so you know she's making her UFC debut, but she's 5-0 in her MMA career. Pretend like you know something about her.
I do, actually. So she's got some, like, a Romanian wrestling background, so she does have some good wrestling. And, you know, Mara's, I respect her skills because she does have a win over JoJo Calderwood, who I really like. But basically what she did was she lured Calderwood to the ground, threw up an armbar and caught her. And, you know, Calderwood not known for her ground game. Whereas I think we're going to get the Romanian here with a little bit more top game and a little bit more sub savvy. And I don't think Mara's is going to be able to get out from underneath him. So I'm going to go with the newcomer with the win.
Oh, all right. So
probably decision.
You were predicting two newcomers to have wins in their UFC debut.
There's a lot of newcomers, though, too, because I took Tybura losing. So that's three newcomers on the main card. That's a lot for the main card.
Yeah, that's right. Blades, Tybura, and Stanclou. All right, so now we'll move to the prelims and go more of a lightning round here. Probably the biggest name fight on the prelims. You have Nicholas Dalby, the sharpshooter, versus Zach Cummins. Zach Cummins, of course, a friend of the show. They will be fighting in the welterweight division. Cummins, I believe, is coming off a... Was it... We'll find out here in a second... a win, that's what I wanted to say, off of Dominic Steele, first round TKO, but lost to Gunnar Nelson before that, and beat Jan Cabral. So he is...
2-1 in his last three.
2-1 in his last three, and 3-1 overall in the UFC. Nicholas Dalby, on the other hand, is 14-0-1.
He's coming off that draw too, right?
Yeah, coming off a draw with Darren Till, but in his UFC debut, beat Lizzy Zaleski. So he's 1-0-1 in the UFC.
Yeah, and I like Cummins in this too because he's got a little bit more pressure. He's a grinder. If you watch that Dalby Till fight, definitely a fun fight, but Dalby's more of like a strike and get the hell away from you kind of fighter. And I think Cummins is going to put it in his face because Cummins puts it in everybody's face. I mean, he took it to Gunnar Nelson for a little while. I'll take Cummins by just grinding it out.
Cummins puts it in his face. And Cummins is the plus 135 dog here. It's one of the few fights that's actually got action on it in Vegas, 6 days out from this card. Dalby, the minus 175 favorite. And we will move on, unless you had anything else to say, Gumby.
No, that basically does it for me.
All right. You have Merabak Taisimov. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Merabak Taisimov.
Fighting Demir Hadzevic. I dare you to tell me anything about Hadzevic.
I don't know much about Hadzevic. I do know he's a Western European guy making his debut, correct? And, Taisimov doesn't deserve anybody on their debut. He deserves a much bigger name than
that. He's 4-1 in the UFC on a three-fight win streak.
And he's got a hell of a punch, too. He throws a straight right that when it lands, it's always going to turn the lights off. I don't know much about this Hadzevic guy, but I would wager Taisimov is way over his head with Taisimov.
All right. And then you have Ian Entwistle versus Alejandro Perez. Entwistle is from England. I don't know why he didn't just fight on the England card. I'm sure he wanted to. But he's coming off a heel hook submission, hell yeah, son, off of Anthony Burchak way back in December of 2014, and then a loss to Dan Hooker before that. He is 1-1 in the UFC. Do you remember that heel hook submission?
I do remember that heel hook submission, because you got to remember Burchak was a guy who was calling out Thomas Almeida, saying he was the real prospect of that division. If I remember correctly, Thomas Almeida responded with, make sure you get through Entwistle, and he got heel hooked, which is just awesome stuff. I actually really enjoyed the heel hook because, like you, I enjoy any time we get leg lock submissions in the UFC. And Entwistle's got a pretty legitimate ground game, and that's, I mean, going to be tough for Perez, who you're going to tell me something about now.
I was just going to say that he's 2-1 in his last three. He does have a loss via guillotine choke, but he's coming off a TKO of Scott Jorgensen, although that was an ankle injury, so not sure how much you can really...
You can't attribute too much to that. And I would say just with Perez, I mean, if he can manage to keep it standing the whole time, he's got a chance. But I would say Entwistle has enough on his stand-up that he's going to force Perez to move a little bit. He's going to wind up getting somewhere to the ground or somewhere into a compromising position. He's going to lock up a submission.
All right. Last fight on the FS1 prelims, you have Philippe Pejic Did I say that right?
I think it's Pejik.
Pejik versus Damian Stazak. I dare you to tell me anything about either of these guys.
So Pejik is from Croatia. Am I wrong? And he's making his UFC debut. Stancic has fought a couple of times before. He's Polish, if I'm not mistaken. Check me on those two.
Yeah, Pejik is the Croatian. Stazak is Polish.
Oh, good.
Pejik 10-1 in his mixed martial arts career. Stazak 9-2. Pejik is making his UFC debut, if we didn't already say that. And Stazak is 1-1 in the UFC. He's coming off a... He's just 0-1 in the UFC, lost to Yautsin Meza.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I've seen of Pejik, he's got a similar style to Yautsin Meza. Pushes forward, pretty well-rounded, has a decent takedown when he wants to go to it. Knowing that he's similar to Meza in style, perhaps he gives him the same kind of troubles. I wouldn't bet the farm when the odds come in on this. But I'll go with the newcomer again, seeing as I seem to like the newcomers today.
All right, and that does it for the FS1 prelims. You move to the Fight Pass prelims, and you have three fights. One, a heavyweight offering, surprise, surprise, on a show loaded with heavyweights, and that's Jared Cannonier versus Cyril Asker. I dare you to tell us anything about these two guys.
Cannonier has fought in the UFC before. He's from Alaska, or fought for Alaskan Fighting Championships, if I'm not mistaken. He might be Gracie Barra. The Gracie Barra in Anchorage.
His nickname is the Killer Gorilla.
Yeah, the Killer. And he lost his UFC debut.
And he is Gracie Barra, you were correct.
Gracie Barra, Alaska.
He lost to Sean Jordan in his debut via KO.
But he took that fight on short notice. He's got a lot of good stills. From what I could see of Asker, which I haven't seen very much because it was hard to get script on him.
He's coming off a 5-fight win streak, his last win in the EFC, a submission guillotine win over Andrew Van Ziel, whoever that is.
Van Ziel is pretty legit in the EFC is the South African promotion. I'm a big fan of it. Van Ziel is Ziel is ZYL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a big deal down there, and the UFC was looking at him, and I think Asker got the call because he beat him. I'm still going to go with Cannonier here, too, because I think he was way better than he showed in his debut. It's tough to take a fight with Sean Jordan on short notice. I know he's not with the UFC anymore, but that was a contract dispute more than anything else. And Cannonier's got good jiu-jitsu, as everybody tends to when they train at a Gracie Barra place for that long. So I'm going to go with Cannonier. We'll say decision on this one. This will be the heavyweight decision of the night.
All right, and then in a welterweight fight against two people no one's going to know except you, you have...
Bojan Vilakovic.
What you said versus Alessio Di Chirico.
Chirico is they're both making their UFC debuts. Chirico from Italy, probably the best prospect that's come out of Italy since Alessio Sicara.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, and Bojan Vilakovic is from Serbia.
Well, his nickname is Serbian Steel.
Yep, Serbian Steel. He's from Serbia. He's, I believe you said 13-3. He fought for RFA, and he was the RFA champ. And that's where you can see some of his best work. He's trained with some really, really tough guys.
Elevation Fight
with Elevation, that's correct. And the best part about Vilakovic is that he scrambles really well. He frustrates people on the feet, and he scrambles really well. Di Chirico is a submission guy, so in order to beat him, he's going to have to beat him in the takedowns and the scrambles, and I just don't see how he defends against all of those scrambles, because really, I mean, if you've seen him fight in RFA, his scrambles does all the work. He was the champ in their division by submitting Ben Smith, which is really, really legit. Ben Smith is a heck of a prospect and was probably on his way to the UFC before that loss, too. So I'm going to go with Vilakovic here, and I'll say by submission, even though Di Chirico is a submission guy.
How many Vilakoviches does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop? Okay. And then in, I guess, what you would call the main event of Fight Pass, you have Rob Whiteford. This is at the featherweight division. Rob Whiteford versus Lucas Martins. Whiteford coming off a loss to takedown machine Darren Elkins, but he is 2-2 in the UFC. Lucas Martins, of course, Gumby, is coming off a loss to killer Mirsad Bektik, and also shares in common with Whiteford a loss to Darren Elkin. So he's on a two-fight losing streak here. He is in the UFC total. He's 3-3. So both guys at 500 looking to get in the win column in the UFC, essentially.
I like the Scotsman here, Whiteford, because of... I know he got beat by Elkins' takedowns, but, I mean, who wouldn't get beat by Elkins' takedowns? He just beat Chaz Skelly with his takedowns. So I'm going to say Whiteford here. You know, he's a little bit better of a grinder. Lucas Martins might be a better striker, but I'm going to say the more well-rounded fighter here is Whiteford.
All right. I'm not going to argue on you. I'm not going to argue you on it. It's been a long week and a long show, and I think we broke that down pretty well. So it's finally, it's come again, Gumby. We have a fight weekend to look forward to.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this one for a while, and not because I particularly love any of the fights on the card, although the heavyweights are always fun. You know, it's not an overwhelming card, but thank God we finally have one.
And it starts up a nice run of fights for us, too, because you have this heavyweight offering on a random Sunday afternoon, and then next week we have... Habib versus Tony Ferguson.
The fight I've been the most excited about this month, which is crazy to think about with some of the fights booked this month.
And then the week after, you have the pay-per-view where you're going to get Pettis versus Barbosa. You're going to get Henry Cejudo challenging Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title. And we're going to get to see John Jones for the first time in 15 months.
Crazy, crazy good fight card.
All right, so we will be back next week previewing all of that, breaking down the latest news, and we will see how Gumby did in his predictions.
Yeah, well, I'll be tracking for sure.
TopTurtleMMA@gmail.com is the email. You can follow us on Twitter at TopTurtleMMA. We so appreciate you hitting the download button or streaming us, however it is you get us in your earbuds. We appreciate it. We will be back here next week with another solid episode. We will choke you later.